Yeah, hello together. Thomas Bremer, my name. I'm a freelancing software engineer. I've studied computer science here at Karlsruhe University many years ago. And well, now I'm busy also in working on and using OpenStreetMaps. And well, I came across the topic of offline maps on Android. I've got an Android phone and I try to use OpenStreetMaps for navigation. Online, it's great, but next 2 weeks I'll be in Iceland and first there are the roaming charges, which might be to a non-bearable level, and also coverage problems. If you are in desert areas where no GSM stations are around, or when you are riding a boat, when you're boating or shipping on water, and if terrain is difficult, for instance, in canyons, when there are walls to the left and right which block radiation, then you also might be unable to get online. And the last point is when you're flying in a general aviation airplane, you also usually are uncovered by any net, at least in Europe. In the US, this might be difficult. I don't really know, but well, anyway. So the first idea is to use a tool like wget, webget, or how you call it, and download all the tiles you want to present, and simply use the file protocol. But this doesn't really work because the browser usually has some security mechanisms which blocks certain JavaScript functionalities or general scripting functionality or even downloading function. Which partially blocks the file protocol, and you might be unable to build your map, and especially on mobile phones, which you take with you, security, data security is a real concern, and you should watch that, especially at the events of the last recent time we had in Germany. The first idea was to use the HTTP protocol, simply to run a freeware web server to serve map tiles, and then use some stuff like OpenLayers or Leaflet to display them. Proof of concept has been tested already and has been used practically at a recent vacation on Norderney Island for hiking, and it works great. What you can also do here is that modern JavaScript VMs are really fast or efficient. I'm not really sure about efficiency, but they are fast, so you can do some flexible stuff with them. You can do your rendering of vector tiles and enriching the maps by markers. You can run some routing algorithms, and of course they have the GPS localization connection. But the second step now is, which I came across in the meantime, that if you run SL4A scripting language for Android application, you also have access to Python, which provides implementations for simple HTTP servers. And this gives the opportunity that you don't only have to need to store all the collected tiles externally. You can simply use your browser or your server to collect the tiles, and you have now you also have access to use Python on server for applications. And the last point I also listed here was that because my time I've spent all my time in, I finished this now, is that you can handle your file transfer in zip files or SQLite files, which you also can get by WebGet or others. So far for this talk.
Thank you very much, Thomas. We have time for one or two really quick questions. Remember that these are lightning talks, so please try to be very short.
My question is, what's your relationship or opinion about the OpenStreetMap Android, the OSMAND project, which is an offline OpenStreetMap implementation for Android devices?
And this project here is completely separate. It's standalone and only based on OpenStreetMap data. No further further implementations. I mentioned OpenLayer and Leaflet. Yeah, but nothing else. And if no other questions, just a side remark that I've got. I've almost set up a system for a demonstration, which I've got up there in my bag. I still have to install one software, and then I can demonstrate. Maybe tonight at the social event or tomorrow.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is Badita Florin around? Yes. Okay.
Sorry, what did you say first?
This means when I raise this one, you have 1 minute left.
Okay.
And this means you're out of time.
Okay. Hey, hello.
You need the microphone. Okay, the next talk is by Bandita Florin about State of the Map Romania 2013.
Test, yeah.
Okay, hello, welcome. I'm Florin Bandita from Romania, and this talk is about OpenStreetMaps in Romania. In Romania, we have around 1,115 contributor, but the top 20% top 20 persons are added like 70% of the map, I think, like in other countries. We have around 200,000 kilometers of roads, as you can see, around 1,000 locations with German and 3,000 with Hungarian, but we have a population in Germany and Hungarians that live in Romania. This was a statistic made to see by each year the evolution of certain points of interest, like the place of worship or crossing around a different time. This is another one to see different points of interest, how they evolve around each year. And this is with the health category points and the revolution. The fact that we don't have so big community, we tried more to collaborate with local authorities to open their set of data that they have, and so we can import some of them into the map. What we were able from 100 cities that we asked, we got around 14 answers and around 10 files in DWG format that we was able to convert into CHP and use it to import in the QGIS and then GeoSML. In Romania, at least, I don't know in other countries, there is no standardization. Each mayor has their own format, their own, some of them are georeference, some of them are not, some they receive only PDF, and a lot of them, they don't have even electrical form. With data.gov.ro, we were able to obtain the list of the museums, all the museums that they had, and to import them also with the opening hours. And we had like 900 of them. We also get the list of all the places of worship in Romania, and there are over 18000. But we didn't import it yet because there are only at a city base. They're not pinpointed exactly. So we will try to make something that people will be able to pinpoint each of them. On the different imports that we realize that we have added, this is an example of Târgu Frumos, a city in Iași County, that we added over 3,000 buildings. This is another one that we imported, and we also made a visual representation that we are now using for other, when we present to other local authorities, what can we do with the data if they will give it to us. This is another one of Shova that we imported, and this particular was really, really good because it contains a lot of interesting data like the street lamps and also the manholes and power poles. And what we are working now, we are working to collaborate with the second largest economical city in Romania, that is Cluj-Napoca. They don't have a GSI section yet, and they would like to develop, and we are collaborating with them to help them build their data on open tools like QGIS and on OpenStreetMaps. Also to increase the awareness about OpenStreetMaps and to bring other people, especially from geography faculty, because a lot of geography faculty in Romania, they don't even know about OpenStreetMaps, and we are trying to fix this situation. And also more mapping parties. And that's about it as the presentation, because it has to be short. I would leave you with a question more. How is in the other countries? Because I know the import issue is kind of a tricky one. So how it's in other parts made? Or how do you think about it? Thank you.
One and a half minutes for question, if somebody wants to ask something.
And okay. Also what we try to do for promoting what to the statistic, because now we want to do some automatic tools that will be able to show some statistic, and we did the infographic to show different statistics about the state of the map, like how many bridges, tags, and unfortunately this is in Romania, so not really helpful. But now we are trying to do something similar with this, but on automatic, to have a database that will update each week and to see how many kilometers of road were awarded in the last week, how many points of interest, and a lot of different things so that people can see in real life what's being added on the map, in which county of Romania, and other stuff like this, and also to kind of make a little gamification out of it.
Okay, thank you, Batita. And we will continue in a few seconds with Cherry Clough talking about woodland cartography.
Okay, that sounds okay. I'm Jerry Clough, otherwise known as SK53. I came to OpenStreetMap 5.5 years ago as an amateur naturalist loading maps onto a Garmin. And although I've done lots and lots of mapping in the interim, one thing which hasn't happened is that the way in which we map natural features, which I'm interested in as an amateur naturalist, has not really progressed. And so I have a bit of a mania about trying to do, working out how we can make things better. And my focus has been on woods because I think there's a good opportunity to make things better. This is improving how we can represent woods on maps is one way in which we can perhaps encourage people to collect better data eventually. So I'm going to start really with a very quick run-through of some historical maps showing that there's a very rich European tradition of representing trees on maps. And anyone who's in the plenary session this morning saw a lovely map of the Karlsruhe area from, 250 years ago with lots of trees represented. So this is 1587, a detailed map of an estate in what is now London. The Cassini cart showing the woods and parkland trees around Versailles. This is a map by Speed in, I think, the 17th century of the west coast of Scotland, and we can see the detail of trees here. This is the town of Beaumaris, also done by Speed, and again, you can see individual trees represented here. South Wales Hollow, somewhat later. If we look at the detail, we have woodlands represented by small groups of trees. The Leonberger Horst, which I think is relatively near here. Again, the trees are represented in a pictorial manner. This is the Dufour cart, I hope, relatively near to where our president of the OSMF lives. This shows the Swiss national map in the second part of the 19th century. And again, we have some kind of fairly stylized representation of trees. You can see that in a little bit more detail. This is the Siegfried cart from around 1900, and the tree representation has become much more stylized. These are World War I maps sent to me by Rob Warren from the Open Historical Map Project, showing that these were still used on British military maps. And my last example of historical maps, and a real inspiration, has been the Soviet military maps, which covered the whole world, and they had a really rich cartography of a whole range of natural forms from tundra to mangrove swamps. And what I like about this is it demonstrates how rich you can make the cartography of woodlands. So basically, I think that, first of all, this demonstrates that there's a very long tradition of doing this, and it's clear that we can do much better than we have at the moment. If we look at the various styles of the cartography, there are three basic categories. There's the bird's eye pictures of trees, which I think really all the early maps used. Then you might have the bird's eye, which is looking straight down, which wasn't used, the pictorial style, which all those early maps used, and then more abstract styles. If we look at most of the topo maps in Europe now, you just have a green fill to represent woodland. So things have regressed, really. So what things can we map? We can map the woodland type at the moment, coniferous broadleaf mixed. We can map the type of trees, the dominant trees, which is fairly easy in Northern Europe. We can represent whether they're planted or not. We can represent whether they're deciduous or evergreen. We can also try and represent whether they have recently been cut down. We can also try the management, whether the field layer is one you can walk through, is it brambles or some other thing. We can map whether the woodland is an ancient woodland, an Urwalder. The height of the trees, the density of the canopy cover, and there are other tree-related things like avenues, tree rows, parkland trees, wood pasture. We have vast number of symbological elements. I've been playing around trying to create symbols at these various levels. So these are individual tree species, scans of leaves digitized as SVGs. We can also control the symbol distribution. Here we have a standard gridded symbology, which is basically what we get with Mapnik. And on the other side, the symbols have been slightly randomized, and I think it produces a better... We can have mixes of symbols. I've lost one, got felled areas. But one to close, I also played with mapping tree rows and street trees, and then I discovered the Mapnik style sheet, as of 3 days ago, is now showing the tree rows I mapped 5 years ago, finally. So we can make progress in this field. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Terry. But a very, very quick question, because he was over time already.
Okay, there's a new tagging structure for types of woods. Can you tell us quickly about that? Replacing the wood equals star.
Yeah, the new tagging style is leaf type. I'm not convinced that it's the best name for the tag, but functionally, it is a massive improvement. So I think we can make progress on all fronts, on the cartographic, better tagging, and finding how to map things, which is one reason why I want to take people to a wood on Sunday, so that we can talk about how we map things, because that's another part of the picture.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dimitri, the next speaker, is he around? No.
Which one?
Dimitri Kisela. Yeah.
Hold on, can you unhook me?
You will have 5 minutes, okay. And 1 minute left.
Do you have your presentation on a stick, or...?
Can I open it? It's on the web.
On the web.
Jerry, can you please sign that you agree with...
Dimitri Kisela is talking about print OSM atlas with QGIS, quantum chess.
Sorry, guys, I can't find it. So I will wave in my hands to show you what I'm talking about. I was mentioned that every year there is a new guy who prints to the OpenStreetMap mailing list that he has created a new way to download our tiles and stitch them together. Every year it's written in Python or Java or maybe another language. And they say that it's really great tool. You just need to print some command line arguments like bounding box and maybe print size, and it will make everything for you. I was such a guy. I want to print a new type of field papers with some new style. And I was thinking about how to create a new bicycle for downloading our tiles and stitch them together. But really, it's a crap. Because you need to know your bounding box, and you need to know the paper size, and you should calculate print scale, and you haven't a nice graphical user interface for that. So I was thinking maybe somebody already create the great thing for that. And yes, such tool is QGIS. It's a very nice GIS program. And you really need only three things for printing OpenStreetMap in QGIS. The first is OpenLayers plugin, which adds you OpenStreetMap or even Google Maps, but I should talk about it very few. Also, you need grids for Atlas, such as create a really great grid for printing maps. It can create with a nice GUI, with a you don't need to make any calculations in your mind. You just click your map layout, and it generates you really nice polygons for map printing. And also you can use it for generating addresses or future indexes using Python console and creating geospatial joins, making geospatial joins. So here's my point. But actually, grids for Atlas working just with 1.8 version of QGIS. For now, it's 2.2. I rewrite this plugin for 2.0 version of QGIS, but guys who create a QGIS breaks my work for 2.2 version, but I think I will fix it. So, your questions? But my point is, don't create bicycle every year. Just use what you need is already here. It's already created.
We have time for a couple of questions. Anybody? Okay. Thank you, Dimitri. And
I can show you a demo, but it's I can show you not right here, not right now, just there, because I need to open QGIS. I need to download my project. I need to download data. Yes, it works.